Part 2. Reign of Regent Matwick. Winter. Chapter 14. Sutterdam, the Free States. Phelan didn't want to race, but Harthen shouted, "Go!" and took off, his short legs pumping. Strictly speaking, this was not really fair because Harthen gave himself a head start. Phelan and Hake sped off after Harthen, traversing the narrow, winding streets. Hake pumped his arms, trying to catch their little brother. Phelan, however, loped along easily, distracted by sights and sounds at intersections, such as a man with a basket of greens on his head or a street performer playing a lute.
"When you pick lettuce, does it die instantly? I love that tune."
Sutterdam was the biggest city in the Free State Vigat. Part of the Alliance of Free States, it sat astride the Sutter River, which looped about and embraced so many tributaries that one could hardly move 10 minutes in any one direction without crossing an arched bridge. Barges bobbed across the rivers and canals moving materials and finished goods, while their poll workers yelled a cacophony of warnings and disputed right-of-way with an impressive variety of oaths. Such a widely mixed population peopled Sutterdam that old colours had long ago blended to make brown hair of every hue and texture, coily, curly or straight, the established norm. Phelan bumped into a vegetable cart, banging his knee, then hopping, rubbing his new bruise, he tripped over the base of a waterspout. By the time he caught up with his brothers on the other side of Cobbler's Bridge, he looked dishevelled, and his unruly hair, which had started neatly tied back like Hake's, had pulled loose.
"What happened?" said Harthen. "We've been waiting for you forever."
"Never mind," said Hake. "But from here on, we'll walk together."
Then, knowing that Harthen always overflowed with energy, he amended, "We'll march to the Square of the Martyrs, like soldiers." And he led his brothers on at a swift cadence. The Square of the Martyrs sat in the middle of Sutterdam. The tree-lined, cobble-stoned plaza boasted an assortment of weathered, life-size statues. 4 centuries ago, the martyrs had approached King Eger VII with petitions about corruption amongst the nobles and for alleviation of their dire poverty. Using his power of transformation, the king had turned them into stone figures that couldn't pester him. The brothers were on their way to meet the Long Roads cart bringing their Teta Norling to Sutterdam. She was their father's older sister. The boys were not supposed to know that some moons ago her husband had run off with the barmaid of their inn. Their father, Hartling, had written begging his sister to join their Sutterdam household, saying they were having a hard time managing, what with the family pottery business having so many orders to fill. This pretext had the advantage of being truthful, but Phelan suspected that his father also did not want Norling to live lonesome. During the winter, even though the inn at Spruce Valley sat bestride the post road, some days no custom stopped. He overheard his father tell his mother that Norling just rattled around that empty ramble alone with no one to fix a leak in the roof. The brothers shared affection for their Teta. During hot summers when they were young, their parents would take them for extended visits out to the inn where the spruces scented the breezes. The city boys learned to ride on the inn's horses and to swim in a nearby pond. And Norling's blueberry tarts were legendary. In recent years, though, their parents had been so busy at the pottery that the brothers had only seen their relatives at holidays. Long Roads carts between locales in Vigat rarely arrived at the appointed hour. This one, however, had come early and had already dropped Teta Norling off in front of the Golden Bridge Tavern. A long-faced woman with a thin nose, she sat on her cases looking around under a bare tree near the Statue of Martyrs. though she wore her innkeep's merry black and white striped gown with a red apron, his aunt looked older and forlorn, as if all the cheeriness had been sucked out of her cheeks. Young Harthen, spying her, dashed ahead to give her a tight hug. Hake greeted her.
"Welcome to Sutterdam, Tedda Norling. We trust you have not been waiting long."
Ashamed that she had been left waiting alone, Thalen just kissed her soft, deer-coloured brow. He noticed that now he had to bend his neck down.
"My, my, how you have all sprouted up," said Norling. "Three fine young men, and so fine-looking with your mother's blue eyes."
"I've been practicing with a sword and dagger." Hartham pulled up his sleeve to show his muscles, which Norling admired. Hake apportioned out the cases amongst the brothers. They set off to the factory first, so their parents could welcome their aunt. Because the distance was so short, really just over Cooper's and Farrier's bridges, Hartham barely had time to act out a vicious street fight he'd witnessed yesterday and boast about how much fun he'd had with his pals dropping eggs on bargemen from Scrivener's Bridge before they arrived. Sutterdam Pottery hummed with the activity of a thriving concern. Housed in an extensive brick building, it made everything from plain jugs for transporting oil or cider to fine pieces commissioned by wealthy patrons. The fancy pieces enthralled their father, Hartling. He designed all manner of shapes, glazes, and patterns. In the outer yard, workers packed up crates while others shoveled coal for the kilns. The boys dropped Norling's belongings in an out-of-the-way corner. Inside, they threaded their way around to find Pater at his wheel, his precise hands forming a picture while his kicks kept the wheel turning. He grinned broadly at Norling, but could not stop at that moment, so Hake and Thalen took her up a flight of narrow stairs at the back of their mother's business annex and the rooms that accommodated employees who stayed to tender the kiln late into the night. Harthen remained on the floor to help Pater.
"Norling," said Mater, getting up from a table piled untidily with lists of commissions, bills of lading and invoices, in front of a wall filled with cubbyholes of similar papers.
"Chirinda, my dearest."
The women embraced and exchanged greetings, and Mater told Norling about how many orders the business had, how many workers they now employed, and how many hours the kiln kept burning. Thalen didn't listen to their words, but compared their demeanours. Mater so bright and pretty, Norling so careworn. Presently, Mater turned to Hake, saying, "Eldest, I must calculate tomorrow's payday. Stay to help me."
"Of course, Mater. Thalen and Harthen can escort our Tedda home."
"Truly, I'm so relieved you've come," said Mater. "With me so busy, Harthen gets into new mischief every day, and I can't keep the boys in hose or shoes." Thalen and Norling retraced their steps back to the factory floor. Harthen, who, as his pater said, had the hands, now sat at a nearby wheel fashioning a wet lump of clay into a flagon that mimicked the shape of the pitcher. He grinned up at them, happy with his skill and the activity. Pater, wiping his hands on his work apron, now had a moment to greet his sister, which he did, Sutter style, with kisses on both hands. Hartling, with his medium height, muscular physique and sober business wig, a headpiece of brown hair tied simply at the back, worn by Free States men who began to go bald, always conveyed a certain economy of motion and a grace that Thalen envied. His father and brothers seemed to know exactly where their limbs had strayed. They never crashed into things. Thalen concentrated on staying out of the way of the busy bustle that surrounded them, warily eyeing a shelf of pots as if any minute he might crash into it. He'd had unhappy experiences with shelves before and was determined not to get caught again.
"Harthen, I could really use you," said Pater. "We must get all of the order for Oledin to fire today." I'm sorry to steal younger, Snorling, but Olette's Olive Oil and Spicery is one of our best customers.
Sure, said Hothen. Thalen can take Ted and Norling home. Losing both brothers posed a problem for Thalen. He couldn't carry all four of Norling's cases by himself. However, he spied a wheelbarrow in the yard that would serve nicely. As they trundled back toward home, Thalen found that balancing the wheelbarrow, avoiding bumping into pedestrians, and not letting the cases slip on the downward slope of the bridges took most of his concentration. As he started to get the hang of the job, Thalen politely asked Norling about closing up her inn and whether she felt tired from her long trip.
"Those carts, they sure give a body a thorough jolting," Norling said, avoiding the first topic.
"I wish we could turn them into swan boats," said Thalen, "that would glide passengers along smoothly."
"Yeah, it would be nice to have the power of transformation," said Norling.
"I've read that with the eradication of Iga's line, no earth magic lingers in the Free States."
"Though your own father," said Norling, "turns one thing into another."
"Well, all craftsmen do. That's not the same as turning a bag of pebbles into a bag of gold."
"Isn't it?"
Thalen grinned sidelong at his tetter's cleverness, and she winked at him.
"Excuse me," said Thalen to a woman with a tray of fried dough who stood in the way of his wheelbarrow.
She moved enough for him to get by. The crooked streets overflowed with people going about their business on this winter day, and Thalen had to pay close attention.
"Tell me, Thalen, what about you?"
"Hartham would make a really good potter, but he has his heart set on becoming a soldier. I don't think I would make an adequate craftsman, nor do I want to fight. Someday, Hake will take over the pottery. My mind wonders when I should be doing figures, so I doubt any merchant would hire me as a bookkeeper. Pater asks me to load carts, but I don't envision life as a carter."
He set the wheelbarrow down a moment to wipe his hands on his trousers.
"Envision," Norling repeated, tasting the word. "I didn't ask what work you will do," she said, offering him a kerchief. "I want to know what interests you."
"I like to read books," said Thalen.
"What kind of books?"
"Histories and nature, the most, but I'll read anything I can find. Have you read Tales of the Rother-Lorther Wars? Or last week I got Of Trees, Shrubs, and Plants. The difference between trees and shrubs is not just a question of size, you know, which many people believe."
"I didn't know. Where do you find such books?"
"My schoolmasters loan them to me, or I spend my carter's wages."
"Did you bring any books with you?"
He nodded his chin at the cases as they started on the downside of Silversmith's Bridge.
"Only two, a cookery book and a book of Weir ballads. You're welcome to both." "Now I wish I'd brought some of the books from the inn. Sometimes, instead of paying their fare in coin, travelers traded in possessions."
"Did you have any histories?"
"I don't recall. I had a whole pile of things to barter. I got rid of it all."
Thalen had to put his back into pushing the wheelbarrow up the slant of Taylor's Bridge, and so hid his frustration over the lost books.
"Do you do well in your studies, Thalen?"
asked his aunt.
"I?
How well?"
"I come in first in most of the subjects,"
he answered as he crested the top.
"But I'm not trying to best the other kids. I just always end up remembering what we studied."
Norling nodded.
"You don't strike me as competitive. What else do you like besides reading?"
"I love music. I would like to learn to play."
"Have you asked your parents?"
No. You know them. They're practical people. They would think it frivolous."
"Dusk," said Norling. "We hired many a troubadour for the inn for busy seasons. Music lifts the spirits. I brought my flute in the black case. I can teach you a few of the standard lays and how to play."
Oh, Tata, that would be splendid. He paused. And I like to eat.
Norling eyed him with a measuring glance.
What are you, 13 summers? I'll bet you grow taller every day. You might be the tallest of the lot. Take after our grandpater, I think, not your parents. But you look a little thin. Are you hungry all the time?
Just talking about eating makes me hungry, said Thalen. Especially being with you and thinking about your pastries.
Well, now that's something else I can do for you, boy. No one has ever left my table with his belly flat. In fact, she said, starting to roll up her sleeves because she recognized Lantern Lane, the curved row of narrow middle-class homes they had turned into, just let me at your pantry.
Not today, Tata Norling. You should rest from your long trip and get settled. We added on a room just for you by pushing the wall out into the space behind the house. We all worked on the construction and Mater bought a rug. It's small but kind of cozy. Will you be comfortable here after all the inn's spaciousness and privacy?
Spaciousness can be a blessing or a curse, said Norling with a grim look.
Thalen considered this apparent contradiction for a moment and smiled sideways at his aunt when he understood it.
Are you sure I can't get into your kitchen?
His aunt asked as they halted at his stoop.
We've got food in the larder. Not as good as yours, of course, but it will suffice.
Thalen lifted the first case to lug it into the house. Norling tugged his loose hair affectionately and then grabbed a second case.
Suffice, will it?
She said, teasing him about his word choice.
What a sweet lad you are, Thalen. Harthen, I fear, is destined for scrapes, but whatever your future holds, I'm certain you'll stay out of trouble.